time. First order of business, pledge allegiance, followed by a moment of silence.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you.
Next order of business is the planning director's comments.
Chairman Bev, I'm going to yield my comment time to County Administrator Eric Dahl for his presentation.
Okay.
I'll be giving comments later in the regular meeting, sir.
Okay. Our next item is a public comment section. Anyone wishing to come forward to speak about anything in the county, please come forward, state your name and address. You will be limited to 3 minutes. Seeing no one coming forward, we will end the public comment section and we'll go into our work session presentation. Mr. Dahl will be talking to us about Zions Crawford Water and the wastewater update.
Sure, so Mr. Chair, members of the Planning Commission, like I said, Mr. Miles, forming up the Planning Commission, just kind of like the update on what's going on with the Zions Crossroads Water and Sewer Project. We also have kind of some new developments with that project as well. So I'll just kind of go over the original project overview. So again, the Zions Crossroads Project is basically normally starts at the Women's Correctional Facility. That's where we're getting our water from. Goes down to 215-15 and then basically goes south on 15, roughly about, right around a mile. In addition to that, there's an additional portion where the water line is also going from the women's prison going west on 250. It's about 3/10 of a mile to Memory Lane and then going up Memory Lane there. So that's kind of the water and sewer line. That's where the lines are going. In addition to the project, if you remember, it includes an elevated storage tank, which is up, and I've got some pictures of that. In addition, along the water line, we have a water booster station on the property of the Women's Correctional Facility, and that is where pulling the water out of the Women's Correctional Facility and pushing it into the water line going down to 215-15. And then there's also a sewage pump station, which is complete. Right where Max Auto Center is, Starlight Business Park right there, right on 15. If you've driven by there, you'll see like a little tiny prefab building there right off 15, which is just about complete as well. The whole water and sewer line project with the pump stations and the elevated storage tank was at an original cost of around $11.6 million. At the time, the board wanted to cash fund part of it because we took out some cash funding. Well, the board wanted to cash fund the radio project some years back. Interest rate environment was good, so we took out debt for the public radio system project and kept some cash to leave in fund balance. And then so the board said, well, let's use some debt proceeds for the Zions project, but let's fund it with cash also. Go back about, 3-4 months now at this time, and COVID-19 comes along, and we're not sure what our revenues are going to look like for the fiscal year. So instead of using the cash to fund the part of the project that we had anticipated for many years, which was going to be roughly around $3 million, we decided to preserve the county's fund balance, leave the cash there, so we have a good idea, once the fiscal year ends, we can make sure that we're in a good cash position if COVID-19 was going to change our revenues drastically. So we're currently in the process of taking out some revenue bonds for that additional amount to preserve the cash. In addition, we've got a second component to the Zions Crossroads project. So Douglas, if you want to go to the next. So again, this is just the project line. So if you start up there by A, if you kind of go down a little bit, there's a little P there. That's the Women's Correctional Facility. That's where the pump station is. That's where the water booster station is.
So the water goes from there, and the blue is the water line, and the green lines, that's the forest main or the sewer line. So you can see, and you know, it shows you all the parcels. So I'm trying to see here. So if you go down to where C is, that is where the elevated storage tank. The elevated storage tank is right there, basically right across the street from the Crescent Inn. And then if you go down to D there, and where the other P is, that's where the sewage pump station is, right there on 15. So that's the actual line layout for the water lines and the sewer lines. And like I said, we've got that little piece that goes a little west of the women's correctional facility and goes down Memory Lane, which are all properties, well, which are a majority of properties currently that are zoned. I think a majority of them are zoned I-1 right now. They have industrial uses to them. So at some point we're hoping that will be more of an industrial park, and water facilities, water infrastructure will be in place for that. So that's, does anyone have any questions about the project location or anything so far? Okay. Next slide, Douglas. So again, these are just some pictures of kind of progress. So the picture of the left is the elevated storage tank when it was being constructed. And that direction, that picture is looking east, looking towards the east. And if you go on the other side, this picture is looking towards the west, at the completed elevated storage tank with the county's logo on it. And we've been trying to use that logo more for branding. We still have our county seal that we use for official stuff. You know, if you get a, you know, you get your tax payments, we want to make sure it's official, but more for branding, we're using that logo for more county related stuff. The next picture. So the building on the left there, that is the water booster station. That is on the Department of Corrections women's correctional facility property. And the exterior of it, the roofing kind of matches everything existing on the women's correctional facility. And again, we're getting water from there. We're getting 75,000 gallons per day, and we're getting very cheap water from that. But 75,000 gallons per day is not going to be the end all be all. That's, I think right now, in comparison, I think Louisa County on their side is using probably around, I think it's about 400,000 or 500,000 gallons a day for the development they have there right now. So you can see 75,000 gallons isn't going to go that far. So first thing is, you know, getting some water in there. It'll definitely hold us over for a little bit, but, you know, we're still working on long-term water. And then again, we also have sewage capacity through the Department of Corrections. Our sewage capacity is going to go and can be treated through the women's prison. They have a water and sewer treatment plant on their property. So we'll be utilizing that. And in the future, there may be an opportunity for expansion with the county working with the women's correctional facility, whether it's water or sewer expansion. But we'll have to kind of see how that kind of plays along. But immediately once this project's done, well, we're already looking at long-term water. We've been looking at long-term water for a while, but we're going to have to seriously take more next steps to get that long-term water supply going. So you can go to the next one. So the project schedule, so forget design and everything. So a lot of the water and sewer stuff, you know, just started, you know, kind of ramping up back in 2015, but right around 2017, we took out some of the initial debt proceeds for this project, started design and everything. But as far as the actual construction of the project, notice to proceed for construction was issued a little over a year ago, March of 2019. So the elevated storage tank and the project was broken up into three separate contracts. We had one contract for the elevated storage tank with CB&I, which is a Chicago Bridge and Iron. They do a lot of elevated storage tanks. That's kind of their specialty. Then we had a whole separate contract for the water booster station and the sewage pump station. We got a contract for a vendor that worked on a lot of mechanical stuff. So that was their specialty. So Sargent was doing that. And then AG Dillard, which is a local contracting company, they won the bid for the water and sewer line construction. So going back to the elevated storage tank, substantial completion was May of 2020, which is, we're, as you can see, we're there, the tank's up. They don't have a whole lot to go left to finish the tank, and final completion is this month. Now, they're still working on a few components, and since all these projects are kind of all interconnected, one contractor could potentially slowly delay final completion. The water and sewer line is the most comprehensive piece, and we'll have to see how some of these dates shake out with that. But for right now, like I said, the elevated storage tank final completion is supposed to be this month. The water booster station and sewage pump station, phase one substantial completion was March 2020, phase two substantial completion, September 2020, and then final completion for those two buildings is October of 2020. And then for the water and sewer lines, like I said, AG Dillard, a Fluvanna business, substantial completion was May of 2020, phase two substantial completion October 2020, and then final completion is December 2020. So, you know, we'll have to see how some of these dates push out. I have a feeling that the water and sewer lines, that I would love to say that final completion will be December, but I don't 100% see that at this exact moment, but we'll have to see how things proceed. So that's the original project. That's what we the board approved. We've been working on, and you know as you can see, if you go up there, things are being built, things are happening. And unfortunately, COVID hit, but we're still moving along and we're still getting things done. So Douglas, if you go to the next. So at the beginning of this calendar year in February, DEQ reached out to the county and said, look, we have four properties that we've been doing these charcoal filtration systems on their wells for almost 20 years now. So if you know where the Beaver Dam Market is, there's four properties right there that had contaminated wells. So I guess whatever happened when the Beaver Dam Market had some type of underground fuel tank or storage petroleum tank, there's some type of leak that happened. Well, whenever these any of these type of petroleum outfits have any type of underground storage tank, there's something called petroleum storage tank fund. So if anything happens, there's money that's set aside to mitigate any contamination that occurs. Well, DEQ has this petroleum storage tank fund, and they've been paying $50,000 a year for 20 years to put in charcoal filtration systems for these four properties, and they have to do it yearly. There's also two other properties nearby that they have not been doing anything with, but they're at high risk, and it's possible that they could also be contaminated at some point. So they reach out to the county, knowing that we've got a water line, you know, about a mile up the road, and they said, would we be interested in extending our water line? And after some discussions with them, and after saying, well, we have nowhere near an immediate need to go down that far, but if DEQ had funding that they would want to chip in, we would certainly consider it. So with some back and forth conversations with DEQ, DEQ committed to putting $1 million into the project to run the water line from Memory Lane on 250, another 1.3 miles west, going down to those properties there, just a little west of the Beaver Dam Market. So the whole project itself to run that water line, we're talking about easement acquisitions, design, permitting, all that, plus construction, is estimated to be around $1.5 million. And DEQ's putting in, we've got them to put in $1 million towards the project. So the county's coming out on this one for $500,000, which is good to get that water line extended another 1.3 miles. And really, we probably only have maybe a mile, mile and a half from that point then to the Albemarle County line on 250. Now, like I said, that's just a water line going from Memory Lane. It doesn't have sewer at this point, but that was our main thing. DEQ is going to put in money to help mitigate those contaminated wells and get water to them. So they'll be paying customers once this is all said and done. So the way we worked this out with DEQ, it worked up into, they would provide money kind of basically in two pots. They'd provide up to $200,000 for the engineering phase services, and then $800,000 for construction phase services. So our current engineer, Dewberry, we got a quote for engineering services, which is just roughly under $150,000. So anything in excess of that two, so again, we got $200,000. We've got a task order with our current engineering company for $150,000. We can use that $50,000 to go towards the construction. So really, at the end of the day, we've got $1 million that we can spend and utilize towards the project. So the Board of Supervisors just approved at their last meeting an interagency agreement between the county and DEQ for the $200,000, which basically means DEQ is going to reimburse the county up to $200,000 for engineering services. Once we get the whole design completed, at that point, then, and once we know, well, let's just say, for instance, we've estimated from our engineers that the project's going to be $1.5 million. In 6 months from now, say the market just goes absolutely haywire and construction is now $3 million at that point. Well, we've got some outs from the county standpoint. We're not locked in that we're where we have to move forward. We don't have to reimburse DEQ. We worked it out where, look, if it wasn't for you approaching us, we wouldn't even be moving forward with this. So if you want to kind of go out on a limb and, you know, have us proceed with this, we want to make sure that we're not hooked to have to reimburse you for the engineering. So that occurred. And then again, like I said, we have, you know, up to $800,000 or more to finish the project out for the construction piece. So like I said, $1.5 million project estimated, and $1 million is being funded by DEQ. So we will have a nice long stretch of water line up along 250 and the 15 area. And the next phase of that is certainly the long-term water source that we need to get in there. So Doug, let's go to the next slide. Again, this is just a picture showing where it's going. So again, memory lane's there to your right, and that's where the original project ended. And if you see where the memory lane, little boxes with memory lane, that's right around where the Cosner property is, the old Cosner Brothers facility. And then it goes all the way down, straight down there past Beaver Dam Market. And if I remember correctly, if you see where the yellow line goes, I think the next subdivision right around there, is that Fieldstone? Yeah, Fieldstone. So it goes all the way down that way. And like I said, you know, we don't have too far away from the Omero County line at that point. So next slide. And again, this is just another one showing, just showing some of the parcels and properties from there. And as you see there to the right is the Women's Correctional facility there. Next slide. So the schedule for this, so the board just approved the interagency agreement with DEQ. I signed it. We sent it to DEQ. We're waiting for DEQ to sign the copy and get it back. And then I'll sign the engineering task order for our engineers to start proceeding with the engineering, going through with preliminary design, county review, field activities. 100% design submission will be December of 2020. And then we can go out to bid probably around March. So in theory, right around the time that the original project is supposed to be completed, right around December timeframe, this next project, the design will be completed and we'll be able to go out to bid and contract for the next phase of this project.
Yeah. So you can offer the folks along that, along 250 there, the opportunity to hook up?
They can hook up if they want. Now, the thing with this is meant to be, because we have such a small capacity up front, we are not going to make people hook up. If people want to hook up, they can, but the initial push of it is really going to be more from a commercial economic development piece, because that's really the genesis of this, is to get more commercial business in the county. And if we start putting out there really cheap hookups for residential, then we're basically cutting into our water supply that we have limited right now. And then that's going to provide less opportunity to bring businesses in to hook up to the system. So probably you're going to probably see, and we're working with our engineers right now to determine kind of what some of the rates are going to be, some of the hookup fees, and they're kind of finishing a master water and sewer plan right now, which encompass, you know, rates and hookups and all that. In conjunction with all the construction going on, but we'll probably make it. We don't want to make it more expensive than our neighbors, but we want to make it a little competitive. But like I said, not so cheap where everyone with a single family home is going to hook up to it and take away the capacity from a business piece.
So this is the same 75,000 gallon pool, right?
Yep. Initially. Until we get the big water pool. Next one, Douglas. I think that's yeah. That's all I have. You know, so obviously the final piece of that is long term water supply is the county getting the James River Water Authority intake and getting the water going up through the Louisa line, which goes up through the eastern part of the county. And then they've got Louise already has a water treatment plant already built up in their county. They have lines already going to Zion's Crossroads. Our water system is already hooked up, and it's already hooked up to the Louisa line. So when and if the JRWA gets that piece completed, we have agreements in place with Louisa County to be able to purchase, not the water, but the treatment piece of it, because 50% of the water going up through the JRWA line is the county's, but obviously, you know, they're going to have to pay to treat the water and what it's going to take, what's the cost of treating the water, the treatment component of it. So, but at that point, the county will have 50% of the water capacity, which is 4 million gallons a day that we could, once the JRWA.
So is that project complete except for the most important piece right there at the river?
Yes.
Question it. What does an average business use in water per day, or do you know?
Oh, goodness.
You can tell us some of that.
Depends on the business.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I said average.
You know, honestly, I was trying to base it, and I had these numbers before, and I just don't remember. I was trying to think of an average household. I think the average household uses about, was it like 3,000 gallons a month or something like that? Does that sound... I think it's around 3,000 to 5,000 gallons a month.
Mine goes from my water bill. It's like 3,000 to 5,000.
Yeah, I think it's about. That's roughly what it is on a monthly basis. I mean, so you know, you could hook up quite a few residential homes, but you know, if you get one large intensive water user, yeah. I mean, that could tap out our supply instantly. So until we get the James River water supply hooked up, going to the Zion's and providing water to Zion's Crossroads, I don't necessarily know that we want Gatorade going up on the corner of 250 and 15. It would be fantastic, but that would pretty much tap us out on any further commercial development there, then.
And that water tank holds 600,000?
500. It's a half million gallon water tank, 500,000. So, and it's identical to Louisa's. Again, theirs is a 500,000 gallon tank too. And again, I said our water lines are interconnected, so we both have redundancy. So if something happens on their side, they could open up the interconnect and they could pull water from us and they'd have to pay for it. And same thing, if something happens to our water tank and we lose pressure, we could go vice versa too. So there is some good redundancy built in the system and working with Louisa on this. And hopefully we've got, you know, hopefully we'll get some good forward progress on the JRWA in the future here.
There's also a possibility later of getting more water from the prison.
There is. Now, you know, the only downfall to that is the prison is limited by the Meechung Creek. And if you see the Meechung Creek, it's not exactly the most, you know, overflowing creek in the county. And, you know, they had some drought issues, you know, back during a drought. Well, Fred, you know, what was that, 2002? I was thinking, yeah. So, you know, and maybe long term, maybe once we get the JRWA water supply, maybe the prison would want to become maybe a water purchaser from the county. Because they don't necessarily have the best long-term water source, but if we have a long-term water supply, maybe there's a way to get our water our raw water to the prison, treat it, and then we can push it out from there. So as we move forward in the future, you know, we've myself and some of the public works staff, we've toured the prison facility, the water treatment plant, and sewage treatment plant, and they've got, you know, some interest to coordinate and work with the county to team up on some things in the future. Nothing set in stone at this point, obviously, but you know, they may have a need, and you know, so there's some collaboration that can occur.
If the situation should present itself that Louisa has to help out Savannah or vice versa, how does that communication happen? Does it take days, or is it a phone call to a specific person and they authorize that push of that water?
Oh, you're talking like if there's an emergency? Yeah, and I don't know the exact, but it should not be a day's thing where, you know, you have to get all these approvals. There's going to be plans in place that, you know, and I don't have the documents, but there is, because we have an interconnect, there's things written in there that says if, you know, if an emergency occurs, then we just open it up. And then there's a meter on it, so we know what's being metered, if it's going one way or the other.
And so the cost of that water for residents on either side is not going to change.
Correct, because, you know, at the end of the day, Louisa County, they're charging their residents a certain rate for water. Now, they may be able to treat their water really cheap through their water treatment facility, but maybe if they have to get our water, maybe it's more expensive. So they don't necessarily want to use our water. I'm just saying hypothetically, if it were to be more expensive, and vice versa. So yes, it's not meant to be a long-term thing, and it cannot hinder our capacity for what we have currently.
Gotcha. And then my question also goes back to the DOC, the women's prison. Is that a conversational contract just between the women's prison, or that's between the state?
It's between the state and the county.
Okay. Yep. And so if for whatever reason that facility should close, does that impact what we've put in place already, and then you'll have to do something else additional?
I might defer to Mr. Payne on that. I mean, we have contracts in place that contemplate a certain term for water usage, but I don't remember right off the top of my head what it may be or how that would work.
I don't know that that's been specifically discussed. The contract is between the county and DOC.
Yeah.
So what DOC uses the location for is not part of the equation.
Yeah, we had to get approval from the Department of General Services through the Commonwealth for the contract. So,
and it's got a term. It's got a number of years. So, if they close the prison tomorrow, we still get water.
Yeah, and I don't.
Years.
Yes.
Okay, because I just wanted to make sure that whatever happens that way doesn't impact what we already.
Well, you know, you never know. I mean, the Commonwealth could come in and say, you know, we're the Commonwealth. We make the rules. And they could decide they were going to cut us off.
They could, just like with this DEQ interagency agreement, you know, state or federal, they could come back and say, look, you know what, we're going to stop our funding right now, and we're not giving you any more, even though we have contracts in place now.
But that's very unlikely.
Yes.
If that happens, we got bigger problems than the immediate thing.
That was
all my
question.
Yeah.
We appreciate you coming in. And
not a problem. Like I said, we're looking forward to that project being complete and what it provides for up at Zion's Crossroads. So.
Well, it gives us an idea with other projects that are coming before us.
Yeah, we hope that we can get more water and sewer projects coming before you and continue to build up the county in its growth areas. Thank you.
Okay, the next item we have on our work session is the solar energy facility zoning next.
Wow. Mr. Chairman Bibb and members of the commission, so I'm going to kind of walk you through. This is going to be more like if you remember a few months ago, we did the Viewpoint Town facility. It was very specific in that we wanted to talk to you about doing that. The solar energy facility zoning text amendment, most of you know July 1st are all of the legislation that went on becomes built, you know, law. So I'm going to walk you through some of the things I think affect us as a county first, or actually just the statewide of Virginia. Governor Northam has been, in his whole term, has been working on clean energy and all the different components that come to that. So if you go to the next one, Brad. And keep going, I'm sorry, the next one. So I just wanted to kind of walk down most of us in our neighborhood may or may not have solar energy already there. You might have some rooftops. Some older neighborhoods may have freestanding ones in their rear yard and that kind of thing. So a lot of the things that the residential solar installers were running into were HOA restrictions. And basically this compromise was written up for instance, I'll just say that the lake is an example here in the county. If anything goes on as far as the restrictions that takes it 5% over the projected costs, that's not permitted. So they would have to change their requirements. Same thing with the 10%. If like, let's say the lake says, well, you can't put, you know, solar panels on your roof, but you can put them in your backyard or whatever, and it decreases the amount of saturation on those panels by 10% or production, that's also not under the new legislation. So generally, a lot of the HOAs across the state of Virginia, the Brandon Mills and Wood Lakes, the Lake Monticello, the Lake Anna, all the facilities, locations like that would have to follow this. For our respects, as far as the county, Andy Wills and our building official in our office, county review would just be the regular electrical and zoning permits that we've always done. So, next slide. I just wanted to give you an example. The solar energy technology and innovation is advancing so fast, and a lot of times it's great to see this legislation come about because private sector, government, we're kind of matching up and allowing the technology to go forward and do good things with, for instance, you'll see that house on the left actually has the entire roof line and area as solar panels integrated. And I just put a picture in on the upper right so you could see that where it's the regular roof, but that entire roof in California actually is now a solar facility. And usually those type of installations are done on time of new construction so that it's already integrated in. Then the car that's sitting in the park in the driveway, that's a Tesla. It could be any, it could be a Honda Element or anything like that, but those panels on top are doing things for that car on that glass, plexiglass roof. So just wanted to point out all kinds of technologies going on to do that. Next slide. So another component of the legislation was that a lot of our universities would be doing research and working with various agencies. The University of Virginia here in Charlottesville area has been tasked to work with the Department of Mineral and Mines and Energy, specifically the Energy Division, and the UVA Walden Cooper Center is doing a lot of the high-tech research to have the Southwest Virginia mines that are closing or have closed to be retrofitted to a better use. So as I said, you know, Governor Norton's been leading these changes. Next slide. In Richmond, kind of going around the state, giving you some examples, VCU recently was very innovative in their chemistry and high-tech research, had solar panel technology that before you had very low-tech panels, and then you had high costs. So their research has come out where they've created the elements and like the silicone and the other elements in there to be both low cost and high efficiency. So it was the perfect sweet spot by enhancing, and then that in the solar energy fields out in the field, the light harvesting is now as optimum as they can get for the technology that they have. So we did that here in Virginia, and that's across the nation and the world, they're using our technology. So it's kind of exciting. So the next slide. Blacksburg, Virginia Tech, they're doing a lot of innovative things with wind turbines and because of the mountains where they're at, and then also the technology that they go out and do along the coast. I had to throw in that I found out that Penn State actually was working with them, so it's kind of cool. But Virginia Tech's aerodynamics and Penn State, they're both kind of working here in the Mid-Atlantic together because solar is not only in the state of Virginia, but it's throughout the Mid-Atlantic and the East Coast for a lot of our technology. And a lot of the other technology, like I showed you before, is more southwest United States and the West Coast. So next slide. So just kind of some broad brush definitions or things that are going on. The Department of Minerals and Mines and Energy has what's called SolSmart program, and localities and agencies can be certified in this. And for if a locality chose to want to encourage solar energy, if that was something they wanted to do, funding by the U.S. Department of Energy, along with the ICMA, basically we're trying to get all the people who are interested in assisting to increase our solar and green clean energy things. But mainly it's focused again on the area of Southwest Virginia. If we're no longer using coal-fired plants and natural gas and other petroleum-based things, how can we take those minefield areas and either become solar facilities? And for us and the state and hopefully the Southwest Virginia area gets employment as well. It's very depressed, so we're Governor Northam and his administration are trying to take care of that element as well. Next slide, please. So Virginia is now applying what we've learned already. Wise County, an old mine field, is a 3.5 megawatt ground-mounted solar energy facility. It's also being done by one of the companies that we're working with here in Charlottesville, Sun Tribe Solar, which will eventually power a new on-site data center with a net metering system, excuse me, and then they're currently going about exploring other mine locations in Southwest Virginia and probably other areas of Kentucky and so on in that area, but West Virginia, but I'm trying to focus on Virginia. Next slide. So in the last 5 to 7 years, in this process of doing solar energy, a lot of us refer to things as solar farms. So the next generation or phase of solar energy facilities, we've learned in the zoning process especially that we don't want to impact quality farmland. We also don't want to impact commercial sites or industrial viable sites. So where are we doing that? We're doing it hopefully at government and school buildings like we're doing with SunTribe Solar, the school division, industrial warehouses, rooftops, on their tops of their industrial warehouse, usually new data centers. If you have an expansive parking lot, like let's say Albemarle wanted to do something with the Fashion Square that has like a large area, that's underutilized, and they wanted some revenue, and they wanted to power their redevelop or do what they would do, Albemarle's going to do, might do something there. Brownfields and urban areas, as we talked about, former mining sites, and a lot of areas that have consolidated and closed airports and runways, solar energy facilities love that because there's no grass. There's nothing there. They just put it right on top of the concrete, mount it in, and go to town with creating solar energy. Next slide. Trying to give you guys a little some pictures here, so I'm not all text, because I know some of this gets a little technical. It was for me reading through all the General Assembly legislation, but This is your general, you know, solar energy facility panels that are going on right now. And you're going to see them change even more so. Next slide. So now we're kind of getting down to what you all do for the Planning Commission and the Board of Supervisors. So in the legislation, right now, you all are hearing special use permits and rezonings. The next generation of how the legislation tells us to do these type of facilities, it's kind of a hybrid. And that's beneficial to us as a county or any locality. So this authorizes any locality to include reasonable regulations and provisions in the zoning ordinance for a special use permit that would be similar to a rezoning. With and Mr. Payne and Mr. Dahl and I will work on this as I write the zoning text amendment. But basically, similar to dedication of land or cash payments that are spelled out in our CIP via hybrid process, so that basically what it's doing is the applicant and the county are now partners in addressing, it's basically a business, a commercial. A lot of times we called it a solar farm in the past and we just put it on a solar, you know, a agricultural area, impacted that agriculture area. And so in the process, the state and localities, we've all learned how to maybe do it better. So it's no longer just straight board SUP conditions. And yes, sir, thank you. We get these 10 conditions. We'll go build our solar energy facility. So that's how it's styled and proposed. But of course, we'll address and write the ordinance amendment that way, best for Flavanna and in our county. So next slide. The other element of it is, what are you all always looking at? Is it complying with the comprehensive plan? Solar energy's facilities in the new legislation, we can deem it to already be in accordance with the locality's plan if we just waive that requirement. A lot of localities now are doing that with communication towers. As well. So in a similar fashion, they're not all sending them through the SUP process with a substantial accord. Some have argued that it's slows down solar energy facilities. We, as planners, we don't, but by the rest of the bullet there, we feel it is important to add the clean energy information into our new comp plan, which we will do as prescribed by legislation. So that it, so any developer or citizen or anyone who uses our comp plan will know that we're doing our part here in Flavanna and the region. So next slide. So now we're kind of getting down to the very end where, like I said, we were doing other text amendments. It's a little bit wordy. I'm not gonna read all of it to you because, but basically it's indicating very precisely what we're trying to have as a solar energy facility. And it covers all the different ways you could have it. Things on rooftops, things mainly is utility scale solar, the ones we're all familiar with. But in the end, the purpose is for wholesale electric generation. And then as you've seen and you'll see tonight with Brad's presentation, the next SunTribe one, the different power agreements and purchase agreements. But basically this definition, as they worked it through the legislation and various land use attorneys that participated and so on, it's, we're no longer just a solar farm. It's very high tech. So next slide. I'm getting close here. So this is, and I left this real flexible because we're all getting this right after July 1st. A lot of us and as zoning administrators wanted to bring all this to our commissions right after being adopted. But the proposed proposal would still be very similar to how we have it styled now. Right now in your ordinance, the solar energy facility are actually called major utilities. Mr. Robinson did one once before about 4 years ago that was, we use major utility. So those, the SUP in the, those districts would be the same. And then we may consider, in an I-2 district, that has no water and sewer and probably never would or something, that kind of thing, like Mr. Dahl just presented to you all. Maybe that would be suitable. So, but that's basically, I think that's the last step. We go to the next one. Yeah. So, yes, sir.
Would we do something similar to wind, or would it be incorporated into this, or would it be a separate thing if we decide to do anything with wind?
I think it's going to be separate. Because this enabling legislation is quite specific to this zone.
I also looked at the fact that landfills are a good possibility, mm-hmm. stuff like that.
Cap landfill, yes, sir.
Bit feasible for our closed landfill here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so a solar provider, a utility scale solar company, remember they're usually using the satellites and GPS to find the best, where's the earth being hit with the sun in Virginia the best? And if that in their search capability or otherwise, they'll do the SunTribe solar purchase power agreements to help out us as a county either way. So. Yes, as Mr. Payne said, a lot of this legislation is very specific to solar energy. However, all the different things that have been adopted, I think that I will tell you, they're still, as I mentioned about the research, they're still trying to, and I'm trying to get in the weeds too much here, but along the coast and not so much in the mountains, there's a lot of concerns with migratory birds. And things where that you have to do all kinds of other studies and deal with other state and federal agencies. Real quick, I saw that there was an actual installation on a wind turbine that monitored where the birds were, and if the birds came through, that wind turbine shut down. So. That they're doing some other innovative things. So, but a lot of Virginia Tech's research is the mountain ridge lines where you see them out in Southwest Virginia and far west near West Virginia and in the mountains. And then the main push in some of the legislation was, of course, the Virginia Beach coast offshore winds where none of us see it. But again, there's things that they're working on. So.
Yeah, we used to use a lot of wind and solar, call it clothesline.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, Mr. Chairman Bibb, that's the basic tenet, you know, just it's much more high tech.
Can't have one of those when you're chilling.
You can't have it.
So that gives us a little bit of time, Chairman Bibb, if you all need a take a break. We do need to set up the next meeting.
Okay.
If you all had any other questions.
Anybody have any more questions? If not, we'll take a short break and we'll reconvene at 7 o'clock for our regular meeting. Seeing no objections, we are in recess. The Planning Commission for July the 14th. Our first order of business is the Pledge of Allegiance, followed by a moment of silence. Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Next item is the director's quarterly report, April to June 20th.
Hey, Chairman Bibb, members of the commission. Sorry, I'm going to stay down here for this. Thank you. So we, since all through the COVID-19 timeframe, we did, just figured that I would give you a quarterly report because. A lot of exterior things aren't going on with your meetings, but there are a lot of other things.
staff behind the scenes, but I will kind of go through all of your, the things that happened kind of leading up to that, and then the board meeting in June. So a lot of the cases that in February, the two cases, excuse me, that you all did, the Morris Richmond Road case, and then the zoning text amendment to the vehicle impound facility, on March 18th, they were deferred as we entered into the COVID-19 pandemic. We also, at the time, Mr. Robinson and I put together the VDOT Smart Scale Round 4 applications and moved forward in the, to have that keep going in the VDOT application process. And then April 1st is when the official COVID-19 continuity of operations resolution went through with Mr. Payne and Mr. Dahl. And that's continually been renewed throughout this entire 3 to 4 month time frame that has been going on. So then we came out on the other side a few weeks ago, about a month ago now, with June 17th Board of Supervisors meeting. The Richmond Road LLC Morris conditional rezoning was approved. It was approved almost, it was approved without all of y'all, your recommendations and some of the changes, and we worked as a staff to ask the applicant to look at those items. And at that time, he did not change his propers. And then the community had concerns. Some of the lighting and landscaping and other type of things were taken care of. And the applicant's representative, Harry Austin, at the night of the meeting, also chose not to remove the contractor shop at Storage Yard and some of the uses of the building. So, however, the vehicle impound, that was approved for the rezoning. Mrs. Booker, I believe, she abstained because she was standing with you all as the planning commission. She felt that it was good zoning, and there were some other. Mrs. Eager abstained?
Yeah, I think she voted.
Oh, did she abstain? Okay, I'm sorry. You're right. That's right. The zoning text amendment, I think, is where Mrs. Booker abstained. Thank you, Mr. Payne. But basically, the vehicle impound facility text amendment, which was countywide, as we explained to you all in February, they have asked, the board asked to have it deferred for up to a year. We would, make notice or whatever in January when they do the organizational meeting to find out when they would like staff to bring it back to them. That same night, the VDOT Smart Scale Round 4 applications resolution was approved, and that keeps us moving forward in that Smart Scale process. And the three other ones that went on as Turkey Sag Trail and the Route 53 intersection for the roundabout Troy Road and Richmond Road 250. It's kind of right across from Zion Station Road, is where that intersection is. And then South Boston Road and Lake Monticello Road, the intersection improvements there that VDOT has been working with us on. So those are the three that are going forward. And Mr. Robinson and I just received recently the Thomas Jefferson PDC Chip Boyles group resolution for support of ours and the other counties that had two or three VDOT VDOT Smart Scale applications in the process.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, can I make a comment on the ZPA?
Yes.
The one of the things that's significant is that the board's comments indicated that they were not entirely comfortable with the zoning text amendment, and one of the things that they wanted to see was how the landowner actually executed the rights he would have under the rezoning, and it was pretty clear from the comments that the board made that they were taking your comments into account, and I don't want you to think they ignored them.
And I think the way they did it was, you, Mr. Applicant, has told us what you want to do on the front. The question is, what are you going to do on the back? And we want to see what you're going to do before we decide whether to extend this use. So the 1 year thing is a statutory limitation on how long we can keep it pending. And we're just to bring it back when we have more information. But I thought it would be important for you all to understand the context of the board's action.
Thank you, Mr. Pena. It was a rather busy night that night. There was a lot of cases and other topics that they were handling. So, moving on with the report, the Board of Zoning Appeals actions, we didn't have any cases throughout the COVID-19, so at this point. And we're getting into the TRC meetings. We are continuing to be rather busy in this process because a lot of our applicants are wanting to keep projects moving forward, getting things on to you all as sketch plans, as you have a couple tonight. SunTribe Solar, Savannah Middle School is done. LKQ would have come to you tonight, but Mr. Robinson has been working with them on their sketch plan, and their engineering firm from Kimberly Horn from Reston, and they still need some additional work to be done to meet these special use permit conditions to have a proper sketch plan to come to you all. Flavanna Firearms is coming to you tonight, and then the one that's just to below there, SunTribe Solar West Central Primary is tonight. Just want to quickly run through. We've also been as staff taking several webinars and other Zoom type training through this process. Some of them were very specific to civic engagement in the world of social distancing, conducting virtual public meetings like we're doing tonight. Others were VDOT, Main Street type things, the General Assembly legislation, which a component I just presented to you all tonight with the solar energy facilities, and then some other VDOT related stormwater roadside projects, things like that. We're also doing some in-house training to keep up to date on our permitting software. Mr. Overstreet's been doing some training since he's rather new here in the last 6 months or more to kind of integrate some of the WebGIS and other permitting software linkages. Then the other staff members also participated in a Women Mary continuing education to have all of us ready to do planning and facilitating virtual meetings. And then we, of course, had a lot of guidance and from Mr. Payne on those. And then some other, since the solar energy facilities and data centers were kind of coming together across the state and what they want to do, economic development coordinator, Mr. Overstreet, and some others attended the data center industry training. Mr. Robinson and I have been attending the regional TJPDC meetings. Rural Transportation Advisory Committee was held on May 19th. We have one next Tuesday as well coming up. That'll be virtual. And then we've been doing a pretty good amount towards the end of COVID with the Zion Crossroads Gateway Plan. They have launched Sandy Shackelford and the folks at TJPDC have launched our Zion Crossroads survey, and the participation was extremely good. We had 86% of the folks fill it out in a week and a half to 2 weeks, and that was over the time frame that people were just off for Labor Day, Independence Day holiday week. So we've left it open for another week or two to see if there are folks that have come back from the holiday or just did another push out to get some additional information. We do not have those results yet. What we're hoping to do is in the August or definitely the September timeframe, we'll bring back a work session similar to what Mr. Dahl did tonight about water and sewer infrastructure and kind of have more of the transportation elements that would come out of the, for the plan, so you can start putting those
infrastructure components together. The last thing is, as I alluded to a little bit before, our building official that we had when I first arrived, he left at the end of February, and as of May 4th, a few months after that, Mr. Andrew Wills, who was a long-term time building inspector and then worked for the school system in between, he is now back as our full-time building official. So that's all I have for you, Chairman Bibb, on the director's report, and if you have any answer any questions.
Thank you. Anybody got any questions?
Yes, sir, I do. The Zion Crossroads survey that you were just talking about,
yes.
Is that something that went out to the community or just the
city? No, that's a good point. Actually, what they sent that out at this point on is all the actual business owners and landowners who are in the corridor study. So the mapping that we've worked on with Louisa and Flavanna and the TJPDC, it was a targeted approach to everyone in the Troy and basically kind of a component of the northern Palmyra area, zip codes by zip codes and by email addresses that we had on record through the Flavanna Chamber of Commerce. That's where it was done, where the Survey Monkey and eventually the MetroQuest VDOT survey. Mr. Chuck Proctor, at this point, unfortunately, has not launched that survey because they're still collecting the data from Kittleson and Associates for that area. But we, Mr. Dahl and I, have been trying to get that taken care of by the end of the month. And Mr. Boyles, Chip Boyles, has indicated that they're doing that as well. So VDOT has had some COVID delays and some other tasks, I guess, at the state level that they've had. So, but we think that what we're hoping for, Sandy Shackelford and I, Mrs. Martin Key, is we're hoping that we can get both of the surveys done and have all the data, the transportation data and the survey business data synced up. And in the middle of the process, not to get too much in the weeds, but Mr. Brian Rothamel, Economic Development Coordinator, actually did some in mid-April to mid-May, I think was his collection time frame. We actually got some data from some folks countywide, and which affected that area, the same study area, for additional input, and we're going to try to utilize that in the plan due to the fact that we couldn't, right now, obviously we can't hold any community meetings, and so it's been a challenge for us. So we're doing our best to try to collect the data and utilize that.
So the individuals that went at Zion Crossroads, that group that you just talked about, how were those people determined to be a part of that as opposed to whatever the surveys or questionnaires are being countywide to get a
Let me try to answer it this way. Remember back in the fall when you and I were working on with Christine Jacobs on the regional housing? Let me try to answer it that way. What we're hoping to do is early fall is actually do an entire countywide study for the full comprehensive plan. So we are really trying to concentrate our efforts. Let me say it's kind of like a building block approach. The Zion Crossroads study, we're actually in plan. We're going to integrate that into the overall comp plan and then continue to build on that. And we're hoping that we can hold some type of open house here in the Morris Room like we did last fall for regional housing.
Yeah.
And so Christine Jacobs is actually collecting and finalizing all of her housing information. So we're hoping to have all of this data. And again, this isn't a perfect world, but we're getting close here in Virginia, so that we can have all that data ready to go. Because honestly, Mr. Robinson and I really need the transportation data to look at, and as well, Mr. Overstreet to help us analyze it. In the process though, real quick, not to digress too much, Sheriff Good, Mr. Overstreet's completed our development activity report, and we're hoping to also present that and get that taken care of here by the end of the summer. So we're
we're doing a lot of, I didn't put a lot of that in the report, but we're doing a lot of data analysis and collection and things like that that we can do either virtually or here in the office as we come back in. So hopefully that helps.
Good answer, good answer.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. Yes, sir.
Thank you. The next item on the agenda is the first of two public comment sections. Anyone wishing to come forward, speak about anything at the county, come forward, and you will be limited to 3 minutes. Seeing no one coming forward.
Hold on one second, Mr. Yeah, I've got Mr. Babbitt has a...
Okay.
Mr. Babbitt, sorry. Okay, he's ready to go, Mr. Babbitt.
Can everybody hear me?
Yes, sir.
Good. Thank you very much. I know that opportunity had a couple questions with the commission and the board of supervisors, but I did want to come tonight, even though I don't have any issues really with the state development plan for the firearms for Mr. Brookman. But I just wanted to make sure that I was here in case new information comes up, but also just to have on record a little bit of the chronology that created the issues that a little upset at the board and the county and some of the employees. But back when the Mr. Brookman first came with his plan, I happened to be out of the country during the board of supervisors meeting. Did not have any real issues with what the planning commission did. I spoke with Ms. Booker, and I spoke with my representative at the animal hospital that was there that night to make sure everything went okay, and they both knew my feelings, and looking at the minutes from the meeting of the board of supervisors, they both spoke up and tried to correct the board of supervisors when they made an error. They made an error that Mr. Brookman was allowed to use his property through my property, and I didn't learn of this actually until Mr. Brookman came to me. The county never contacted me. Mr. Brookman did. He showed up on my doorstep, and I think you guys can imagine how you would feel if your neighbor showed up and said, hey, the board of supervisors says I can use your driveway for my new business, and I need to talk to you about which trees I'm going to cut down around your building. And of course, I was dismayed, and it caused me to get a little upset, and I think rightly so. I contacted Mr. Nichols, who informed me that indeed, it was an error, and hopefully everything would get worked out, and this went on and on and on, and I had to threaten legal action, and as soon as I threatened legal action, because Mr. Brookman continued to say he had this right, and as soon as I did that, all communications with the county shut off. I couldn't speak to anyone. My board supervisor's member wouldn't return my phone calls. The county wouldn't talk to me. Nobody would talk to me unless legal counsel was present. And of course, if they have legal counsel, I have to have legal counsel. And it became this whole big thing. It was really all initiated for two reasons. One, the error that the county made in looking at the GIS map. And frankly, it's anyone had gone after. And Ms. Booker knew. Ms. Booker actually spoke up at the meeting at the board of supervisors and told them that they were in error. But the error the county made was then compounded because county stood behind it, and then they decided to not stand behind it, and then they would stand behind their lawyer, and it became this whole big fight that really was just initiated by the county, by the county staff, by the board of supervisors, then made much, much worse by nobody contacting me. Nobody told me when he was given that permission. Nobody told me why. Even when I called, nobody told me why or could explain anything. And eventually all communication stopped. And in my opinion, I just felt like that was a really, really poor way to treat not only a previous planning commissioner, but any citizen should not be treated that way. Explanations and communication should be freely flowing. And I did not receive that. In fact, I didn't receive the information for tonight's meeting. And I've been calling the planning commission office or the planner's office every single month, because I knew that I was not going to get notified, even though I personally own the property that Mr. Brookman is accessing through. I knew that I wouldn't get notified. And so I've been calling every single month, begging to know when things have been decided. Let us know when the VDOT has made a decision. And nobody contacted me until I contacted the county again. And then Mr. Miles said he was planning to contact me on Friday. I assume that's true, but even if that is, contacting me Friday for a meeting tonight, when clearly some decision made might be not long before, it is really disrespectful, especially because I've been begging for that information. And I own the property. I really do. I own the property. And so I know that the county rules and ordinances don't require you to send out notifications when a right-of-way owner, you know, is doing something on someone else's property, but it really should. And
Dr. Babbitt, your time is up, but I appreciate the information. And you also called me Dylan tonight, so we've got that information now. There was a misinterpretation of where the actual easement was, what I have been informed of. So we thank
that's
you.
That's exactly right. But that just started the ball, you know, honestly. But and I should say on a lighter note that this is the first planning commission meeting where I can have a glass of wine. I've been to a whole lot of planning commission meetings.
Have a good night.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else wishing to come forward, please come forward, state your name and address. You'll be limited to 3 minutes. Seeing no one coming forward, we will end the first of two public comment sections. Our next item is the minutes of the June 9th, 2020 virtual meeting. Does anybody have any problems with the meetings or any corrections? Or do I have a motion about the meeting, the minutes?
I move we accept the minutes as presented.
Have a motion by Mr. Zimmer to accept the minutes as presented. Do I have a second?
Second.
Have a second from Mr. Lagosino. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye, 5-0. The next item is going into the public hearings. The first is AFD 1902, Patsy P. Griffin, L.A. et al. Mr. Robinson will be presenting.
Okay, good evening, Mr. Chairman and members of the commission. Before I go into the application, I'll just mention that these type of applications aren't something that the Planning Commission sees very often. And one reason is because the agricultural forestal district periods are usually between 8 and 10 years. Last year, the county had 7 agricultural forestal districts up for renewal. So as a part of working on all those renewals, that's some of these applications have trickled in dealing with some landowners who either wanted to add property in or take property out. So that's one reason this request is before you tonight. From what I could tell from looking at records, the last time the Planning Commission saw this type of application was 2010. So it's been quite a while. So anyway, this is a request to add property to the Carysbrook district. She owns 4 parcels in the area, which you'll see on the maps. One of them is currently in the district. She's asking to put the remaining 3 in the district. The Carysbrook district is currently over 1,500 acres. This was one of the districts that was renewed last year. And after the renewal, there were 43 parcels that were a part of this district. So this is a map showing the location of the septic parcels. You see those towards the bottom of the screen outlined in red. And then the green hatched areas represents the parcels that are a part of the Carysbrook district. You can see that the applicant's parcels are directly adjacent to the district. And this shows the current zoning of the area, which is all A1. And this is an aerial image of the area. You can see from this that a lot of the properties in the area are still currently wooded and undeveloped. So on the screen are the criteria from the county code, section 3.1, that the Planning Commission and the Agricultural Advisory Committee are supposed to use in making a decision. So it says the following factors shall be considered by the Planning Commission and the Advisory Committee, and at any public hearing in which an application has been filed. So items 1 through 7 on the screen, they're also listed in the staff report. I won't read each one of them, but those are the criteria. The Advisory Committee met on February the 4th. At that meeting, they recommended approval of this application, and they voted 5-0. So to conclude, this is a request to add parcels into an existing agricultural forestal district. Two of the subject parcels were formerly a part of the Carysbrook Agricultural Forestal District. She had taken them out at the renewal in 2009. Now she would like to put them back into the district. So this request, from what we can tell, it meets all of the county code requirements. And that concludes my presentation. And I will mention that the applicant was not able to join us this evening due to her husband's illness. But she is very glad her application is moving forward. And we have spoken with her and reached out to her.
Anybody have any questions? Mr. Robbins?
Only thing I can say, I probably was on the Agricultural Forestal Committee when that came up 10 years ago. And I just dropped out. I'm familiar with the property and everything. And I can't imagine anybody having any objections to it.
It's all in the rural preservation area.
Correct. Yeah. And as of today, I only received one call from a citizen who just had general questions about the Agricultural Forestal District regulations. Wasn't really any concern or interest in this particular application. So other than that, we haven't received any input from the public.
Any more questions? No questions. Do I have a motion?
I make a motion to be approved.
We're gonna open the public hearing.
Oh, sorry. We'll open the public hearing at this time. Anyone from the public wishes to come forward and speak about this, please come forward, state your name and address, and you'll be limited to 3 minutes. Seeing no one coming forward, we'll end. Seeing no one coming forward or no one online to come forward, we will end the public hearing for this particular project at this time. Do I have a motion?
I move to recommend approval of the proposed addition of tax map parcels 41A45, 41A45B, and 51A128A, totaling 136.664 acres to the Currisbrook Agricultural and Forestal District.
Okay, I have a motion by Mr. Johnson. Do I have a second?
Second.
I have a second by Mr. Zimmer. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye, 5-0. It is approved. Okay, the next item is AFD 1903, Allison W. and Ronald J. Hunterstall. Mr. Robinson will be presenting.
All right, Mr. Chairman, this is our application AFD 1903, submitted from Allison and Ronald Hunterstall. This is also a request to add property into an existing agricultural forestal district. So there are two parcels involved with this application, 6821 and 21D. Both of them are 140.65 acres together. They were previously a part of the Riverside Agricultural Forestal District. That district was terminated in 2012 due to so many withdrawals of the property owners that it no longer met the requirements. So as a result, the applicant would like to place his parcels into the Glen Arvin Farm Forestal District. The Glen Arvin Farm District is currently over 1,700 acres, and it was renewed just earlier this year. At the time of the renewal, there were 6 parcels involved. And this is a map showing the location of the subject parcels, again outlined in red. You can see that they are directly adjacent to the Glen Arvin Farm District. and current zoning of the area, also A1. And aerial imagery, you can see that one thing to note that this property is also basically on the county border. So it borders the James River, and on the opposite side, you're there, you have Cumberland County. But you can see from the aerial there that there's a lot of wooded property in the area. Again, the criteria that I described in the previous presentation on the screen, these are the criteria that the Planning Commission and the Advisory Committee are supposed to use in making a decision, items 1 through 7. The AFD Advisory Committee met on March the 9th, 2020. They recommended approval by a vote of 5-0. So to conclude my presentation, this is a request to add parcels into an existing district. The parcels were formerly part of another AFD, and they're requesting to add them into the Glen Arvin Farm AFD. The request appears to meet the county code requirements. And that concludes my presentation. I believe the applicant, Mr. Ronald Understall, is online.
Do we have any questions for Mr. Robinson or the applicant? No questions. We will open a public hearing at this time. If anyone wishes to come forward to speak on this matter, please come forward, state your name and address. If anybody is online, let us know.
He's online, but he's
did Mr. Understall want to make any comments?
Hey, well, thanks for inviting me to this meeting. I just appreciate the consideration, and you know, as my neighbors are in this Glen Arvin AFD, and they spoke enthusiastically about it and encouraged me to apply. So and it makes sense given that we farm the low grounds and we have a lot of forest land on the property. It just kind of made sense to extend the current AFD. So I appreciate your consideration.
Thank you. No one else wants to speak on this matter. We will end the public hearing part at this time. Is there any discussion by the Planning Commission, or do I have a motion?
I'm familiar with the property down there. It's next to where the old O'Brien farm was, down on the river. I move to recommend approval of the proposed addition of tax map parcel 60A21 and 60A21D, total 140.65 acres to the Glen Arvin Farm Agricultural and Forestall District.
Do I have a motion by Mr. Johnson? Do I have a second?
Second.
Have a second by Mr. Simmer. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye, 5-0. Thank you. The next is site development. The next is site development plans. The first is SDP 2005 Blue Vanna Firearms Building. Mr. Miles will be presented.
Jason, do we have Mr. Jim Taggart and Logan O'Day online?
Mr. Taggart, he's online.
Is Mr. Mike Berkman online? He wasn't planning on being here. Okay. The applicant, Mr. Mike Berkman, is having Jim Taggart from Routerbush to be his registered agent and representative tonight. So if there are any questions that you can answer or ask Mr. Taggart. So the site development plan, Flavanna Firearms. This is the sketch plan presentation. Next. So this is a request for a sketch plan approval to construct a specialty retail store. It's on approximately 10.5 acres. The subject parcel is zoned A1 with a special use permit that was granted back in May of 2019. It's located in the rural residential planning area. The adjacent parcels are zoned A1 and then A1 with a special use permit for the veterinary office. Next slide. it's basically in the intersection there of 15 and Route 6 at the top of 14. And it's located to the rear of the Fork Union Animal Clinic. Next slide. And that's the proposed building site towards the front center of Mr. Berkman's parcel. Next slide. And then this is a north-south version of the animal clinic. Is as Dr. Babbitt presented, I'll briefly, Mr. Taggart's going to go into any of the questions that you all have about the access. The access up to this point, this time, is solely owned and utilized by FUMA and Mr. Mike Berkman and Prometheus Trust, which is both he and his wife, Mr. and Mrs. Berkman. So the area where you see the animal clinic, there's a separate entrance on Dr. Babbitt's property, and there's a completely separate entrance on an access easement just to the south of there. So they're totally distinct and separate for access. And the proposed building site is in the center front portion. Next slide. So this kind of takes you back into the site. This is the sketch plan area that Rautabush has put together. Throughout the late fall, going into the holidays, they originally, Brad, if you can go back to the two entrances. They originally, Mr. Berkman was requesting what's called an access management exception. In other words, that that he would be able to utilize if Dr. Babbitt authorized him to do so. That area, that was VDOT's request. It's called access management so that you're not having people coming out every 10 or 15 feet. Driveways should be separated or shared joint access easements. So that was the approach that was going on. And then towards the end of the process, into the new year of 2020, Mr. Berkman, was concerned that his clock was ticking for his SUP, and he needed to move on in the process. And so we worked with Rautabush and John Wilson at VDOT to see if Mr. Taggart could take another approach so that the entrance would be able to be utilized and the access management would not be needed. And between Mr. Taggart, Mr. Berkman's civil engineer, and John Wilson, and the other folks at VDOT, Mr. Taggart, the engineer, was able to demonstrate that the access management was not a concern anymore and that the entrances could be separate and distinct. So if we can go to this slide. So this is your the location of the store in the front, and then the back area is more of Mr. Berkman's proposed storage for the commercial firearms and accessories store. And then there's the limited parking and area that's needed, and of course his required drain field. So next slide. So again, I've kind of gone over some of this information, but in more detail, the building is proposed to be a 2,800 square foot, one-story retail building. There are 12 parking spaces, and as we saw in the previous slides, the site access is along the western property line with a totally distinct access easement parallel to Dr. Babbitt's and the Fork Union Animal Clinic's entrance. Next slide. So in conclusion, the sketch plan is for the construction of this new retail store. We do feel, as staff, that it meets the requirements of the zoning ordinance. Final site plan that Rautabush would prepare for Mr. Berkman would meet all of their other aspects. And actually, the one that you all have in your packet is more of a full site plan, as opposed to what which is fine, but we prefer the sketch plan element, but due to the time frames and the complexity of this request, I think Rautabush had prepared a lot more details for you all in this process. However, the whatever the comments that you all have tonight or staff has later on in the administrative review process, if you all approve the sketch plan, that information would be updated by Mr. Berkman and his engineer. So staff does recommend approval of SDP 20 case 5, subject to the three conditions listed in the staff report. The applicant and his engineer have worked also to reduce the site's impervious surface areas. From a planning perspective, that's a better environmental project. And if you all deem it appropriate for the sketch plan, it would be another from Fluvanna business. Mr. Berkman is currently located, has a retail store in the Charlottesville area. So, and I believe that he and his wife live and have land here in the Forky. So that's all I have for you, Chairman Bibb and the members of the commission. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
This easement was the actual easement that Dr. Babbitt gave to Mr. Brookman when he sold him that property. It's also the easement that Forky Military Academy uses also. And the fact that I think the only concern Mr. Babbitt has was the fact that the utilities run underneath this easement. So he just wanted to make sure that nobody tore up the utilities. I even asked Mr. Babbitt if they decided to pave it, would that be okay? He said he would not have any problem with that. In fact, we talked to me would even protect the utility lines better if something like that was happening. So that, I think, is the old, that's the old logging road that goes there.
Correct.
Is the actual easement going back to this property.
Yeah, and Dr. Babbitt did run out of time in the first set of public comments in the last few days to a week. He has, as Chairman Bibb has summarized, he is in agreement with this being okay now, that he has a lot of the information in that VDOT also has further comments in the county as well for the site plan. So.
So each one of them have their own entrance?
Totally distinct and separate, yes, sir.
Okay, because apparently he called me after he called Barry after 10 o'clock the other night, and he was all concerned and everything. But he said he hadn't seen the site plan.
Yeah, we actually, like I said, normally it's our policy to get information to some of the adjacent property owners, especially for someone who has, and that was our goal, to do that, and then getting the Planning Commission packets to you all is paramount first before we provide things to the public. So, but we did provide it to him the next, the same time and got all that information to him. And I believe we also, Mrs. Porter also posted it online. So if there were any problems with the attachments in the email, he would also be able to see it online as well. So we feel that we did quite amount of due diligence to get him the information he needed. And he actually responded to me in the fact that he was appreciative of that and in the end of the process here, so.
Anybody else have any questions? If not, we'll open the public hearing at this time. I messed up again here. So. I was still back up with the public hearing thing. Does anybody have any other questions? Would the people from Ravbush like to make any comments?
Is Mr. Tiger unmuted?
He is unmuted.
Okay.
Hi, this is Jim Tiger from Ravbush. I have no comments other than I very much appreciate the staff working with us. Mr. Brookman and I tried to put forth a substantial amount of information, and I think I just confounded the process by giving too much of a full set of plans. But I just want to compliment the staff on how they presented this tonight. And I have no further comment, but I'm happy to answer any questions.
Does anybody have any questions for Mr. Taggart? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
There's no more questions. I don't see any problems with this site plan myself, and like I said, I've discussed it with Babbitt. He doesn't have any problems, it seems, with the site plan or anything else anymore of that. He talked to me the other night on the phone at length. And so, does anybody need any other questions asked, or do we have a motion?
So I would move to approve SDP 2005, the sketch plan request to construct a new 2,800 square foot specialty retail store with respect to 10.5 acres of tax map 52, section 8, parcel 2, subject to the conditions listed in the staff report.
Okay, I have a motion by Mr. Zimmer. Do I have a second?
Second.
I have a second by Mr. Johnson. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye, 5-0. The next site plan we have is SDP 2007, Sun Tribe Solar, West Central Primary. Mr. Robinson will be presenting.
All right, Mr. Chairman, Commission, this is another site development plan request from Sun Tribe Solar. This request involves West Central Primary. This is a request to construct a solar array on the property of West Central Primary, which is tax map 41A16. It is zone A1 and within a rural preservation planning area. That's the location of the project within Fluvanna County, close down towards Carisbrook. And the zoning of the property in the area is A1. So the parcel, as you can see on the screen, the parcel also contains crosses Central Plains Road and also contains Fluvanna Middle School. You all previously reviewed a site development plan request for a solar array at Fluvanna Middle School. So this is a solar array to serve the primary school on the opposite side of the road. And this is the applicant sketch plan. As you'll see in some photographs, the solar array is going in a field behind the primary school that's already relatively flat and situated for development. Just a closer view of the proposed solar array, which will have 9 rows of panels. So this is a view standing from the road behind the school looking towards the field where the array will be going. And this is just another photograph to show you that the site is pretty much prepared, shouldn't require much grading or construction, ready for the proposed use. So the property is owned by the school board, and the proposed array will serve only the primary school, just like the one on the opposite side of the road will serve only the middle school. And as we've stated, it's located on a field south of the existing school. The reason you are reviewing this request is because it involves development that exceeds 10,000 square feet. So to conclude, this is for construction of an accessory use to the school. This project appears to meet the requirements of the zoning ordinance, from what we can tell the staff. They'll have to file a final site plan after approval of the sketch plan. So staff recommends approval of this request subject to the conditions in the staff report. Online, I do believe we have representatives from Sun Tribe Solar in case there are additional questions for them as well. And I can answer any questions you might have at this time.
Anybody have any questions for Mr. Robinson? Anybody have any questions for representative from Sun Tribe Solar? If not, do I have a motion?
Move to approve SDP 2007, a sketch plan request to construct a solar array. With respect to 31.1 acres of tax map 41, section 8, parcel 16, subject to the conditions listed in the staff report.
Okay, I have a motion by Ms. Mary Key. Do I have a second?
Second.
I have a second by Mr. Martino. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye. 5-0, and it is approved. Thank you. Okay, the next item is unfinished business. SDP 1908 Lane Self-Storage Sidewalk Waiver Request that we defer
All right, Mr. Chairman, members of the commission. This is a request for a sidewalk waiver for the Lane Self-Storage Project. So, County Code 2211.11 and 2223.6.6.A require that sidewalks be provided on both sides of all roadways, whether public or private. So the Planning Commission, as Mr. Bibb stated, Chairman Bibb stated, was heard this request at the June meeting and deferred by a vote of 5-0, with intent to find out some more information from VDOT about sidewalk requirements. The applicant has been able to reach out to VDOT, and basically they've indicated their position that sidewalks are not required, and they don't really have a particular preference for or against sidewalks in this area of 15. So just to refresh your memory, this is the sketch plan that was approved July of 2019. And on this proposal that was approved, no sidewalks were provided. And just aerial imagery of the subject property showing you some of the existing development around the site. Again, at the present time, there's not any sidewalks present in the area. This is a photograph that was taken on 15, just a little bit south south of the site. And you can see at this section of 15, which is a two-lane road, no sidewalks are currently provided. And there was development in this section that received a waiver. And the subject property in this photograph is just beyond that house. On the right-hand side, where in 15 in this section widens to three lanes. And again, you can see there's currently no sidewalks provided in the area. So this photograph is just to show some areas of the county where we do have sidewalks. This is taken in Sycamore Square, so you can see this is the type of development where so far we've been able to succeed in having sidewalks. So again, you saw this last month. This is the criteria that can be considered in the granting of a request for a sidewalk waiver. And I believe this concludes my presentation. The applicant's engineer, I believe is online, Mr. Josh Turner from Reese Engineering. And I believe the developer may be online as well, Mr. Jason Lane.
We gave a sidewalk waiver on a property about two blocks away or three blocks away, something of that nature.
Yes.
That was the place that did air conditioning and stuff like that.
Correct.
Yeah, I withdraw my objection to this from last time. I mean, sounds like our ordinance isn't really in line with what VDOT expects from these things, because we have it for every road in the county, according to that. So, I mean, I'm fine.
I had a safety concern about the speed limit there with the sidewalk, and evidently we don't really have any requirements putting a green area between the curbing and the sidewalks and stuff like that. So.
And the speed limit is a point that I forgot to mention, but the speed limit is currently 55 miles per hour along the property.
Does anybody else have any questions for Mr. Robinson or the applicant, either one? Okay, no questions. I think this is not necessary on sidewalk in this particular area. And what the staff has said, it's probably not conducive the way that the lot's laid out and the fact that we actually give it a sidewalk waiver to lots away and so forth like that. I did have safety concerns with being 55 miles an hour and the use of the sidewalk there. So. Do I have a motion?
I move to approve a sidewalk waiver to SDP 1908 sketch plan request to construct a self-storage facility with respect to 4.337 acres of tax map 5, section A, parcel 59, pursuant to county code sections 22, 11, 11, and 22, 23, 6.6.8.
Okay, I have a motion by Mr. Barry Key. Do I have a second?
Second.
I have a second by Mr. Zimmer. All in favor say aye.
Aye. The
chair votes aye, 5-0. It is approved.
Chairman, if I could ask, at the end of my work session presentation on the solar energy facilities, I was remiss in asking you all to go forward with the zoning text amendment. I assume with a lack of questions or concerns about it. Would you all, and that's not a time frame that we're scheduling to bring it back to you, but I would like to, the zoning ordinance actually indicates I should proceed planning commission approval.
Does anybody have any objections with the planning department going forward with the zoning text amendment regarding solar?
No objections.
There's no objections.
Thank you.
Go forward. Okay, it looks like there's no other new business tonight. The last item on our agenda is the public comment number 2. Any wish to make any comments online or here present, please state your name and address. You'll be limited to 3 minutes. Seeing no one online with a comment or here in present, we will end the second public comment